Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. From the West Bank of the University of Minnesota, from our studios in the Rarick Center, this is Culture Cube, the art show that rocks. Good evening, and thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Mark Sheely. As you may know, it is pledge drive time here around Radio K, and I can let you know that thankfully Culture Q itself will not be asking you for money, but without our home here on the airwaves, Radio K, Culture Q would not exist. We would simply kind of be floating around in the ether. You know that Radio K is the place where you go for some of the best music in the Twin Cities, local music, all kinds of specialty shows that we have here, from Sound Grammar that you just heard, to Rude Radio, to Off the Record. All call Radio K their home, and we think that's a great thing that you should be supporting here in the Twin Cities. So before we get started with our show tonight, I'm going to ask, why don't you go to RadioK.org and become a member right now? Because of all the great music that you hear on Radio K, Culture Q is dedicating this show to, of course, music in all different forms. You'll be hearing it tonight, from cover bands to touring bands to the culture of zines behind music that still have relevance today. It's all here on our show tonight, so stick around, because Culture Q begins right now. Our first story on our show tonight comes from producer Noel Clark, who's joining me in studio right now. Hello, Noel.
Good evening, Mark.
So, I guess give us the setup behind your story that you have here.
I'd noticed that, especially in the last week, a lot of bands have come through the Twin Cities playing their records in full. For example, the GZA came and played First Half. He played his Liquid Swords album all the way through. On Sunday, about a week ago at this time, Bob Mould was playing Silver at First Avenue all the way through. So I took that opportunity to look into why artists decide to play their records all the way through, night after night, for cities full of fans. So I sat down and spoke with Matthew Sweet while he was here in town at the Varsity Theater.
2011 was a milestone year for Matthew Sweet.
It was getting to be the end of 2010, and I was thinking, wow, next year, 20 years, I was kind of like, should we do something, you know?
The year marked the 20th anniversary of Sweet's breakout record, the alt-pop classic Girlfriend. So to celebrate, he decided to take the record on tour. Sweet put aside tour plans to support the recently released Modern Art and picked up an old flame.
She's on another planet. She's in my dream. She's some kind of...
And then I had to actually learn everything, and that was sort of really horrifying. But once I did it, it just feels kind of normal and natural now. So it's been comfortable to play, and the people who are fans then are really nostalgic about it. Girlfriend has this thing about it where people sort of saw themselves in it, you know, experienced their own things with it, kind of. And so I think that's why it has a little bit of a staying power for the early fans of it, you know.
Even though over 20 years have passed, Sweet says the tracks on Girlfriend still have a certain power over him as well.
I think it has kind of stuck with me. I mean, the record was probably never as literally kind of autobiographical as people sort of thought it was.
Don't go, don't let my love drive you away. There is so much I have left to say. Oh, don't go,
many of the songs on Girlfriend were written in the early 90s after Sweet separated with both his record label and his wife.
It was during all those times and feelings, so I feel the feelings, I feel like the same person. It's real comfortable, it's weird, it's sort of like being in my own skin when I do it, it's just, but it's been worth it, like I said.
But to play a record front to back for audiences across the country, good material is only half the equation. Sweet says the right group of musicians is crucial to bring a great record to life.
There's really great players who are playing with me. Rick Mank, who's, he drums on Girlfriend, I think about half the record, and Paul Chastain, you know, the two of them are Velvet Crush. Then Dennis Taylor, our new guitar player, we've been with him for about a year. He really had the giant technical job of Girlfriend, because to try to capture Richard Lloyd and Robert Quine's lead parts, which were very out there kind of anyway, you know, it would be really hard to make it seem like Girlfriend, you know. But because he hits a lot of those parts, it kind of helps it come together. I wanna love somebody.
You need to. The way we consume music has drastically changed since the days when people would put on LPs and let them play from start to finish. Sweet says the record industry, as he knew it, is all but gone today.
You know, we live in a time that's so kind of in little pieces now of everything that's going on. It's very different than kind of when we grew up.
But even in a world of viral videos and television singing competitions, some things remain classic.
Never underestimate people's memory and their attachment to things. You know, I think it just gave me some hope because we had such a great turnout from it.
The players may have changed and the fans have gotten older. Matthew Sweet says he's enjoyed his time traveling across the country, playing the entire Girlfriend album front to back, night after night, for rooms full of fans.
Now all these people are doing it, right? And it's actually turned out to be really successful. We're, you know, it's a year later now, we're still touring it, although we think we'll be pretty done playing it pretty soon because we've kind of been everywhere twice now, you know?
Culture Q, I'm Noel Clark. Don't you need?
You're listening to Culture Q here on Radio K, and joining me in studio is Mr. Noel Clark himself once again.
Good evening, listeners, and good evening, Mark.
So that sounded like a great chance that you had to talk to a very iconic indie rock musician, Matthew Sweet.
It was. And it's because of Culture Q that I even got in the door in the first place. I mean, that's the beauty of college radio and programs like this, is that they give people who want to be writers and reporters and cover the arts a chance to get up close and personal with people that they've either idolized for a long time or with artists who are on the cutting edge that nobody knows about.
Yeah, and so many people who are working in the professional world, from producers at WNYC to people working at some of the best venues and clubs around Minneapolis, Radio K was their first step into learning how to get into that kind of professional world. And without that, well, I just don't want to know like what kind of a music scene Minneapolis would have without that college radio station.
I think that our music director put it best in her interview with Billboard magazine recently when she said that Radio K is a place where people, or it's okay for you to fall down and to completely embarrass yourself on the air, because that's how you learn. And that's why this station is so important to not only the people who listen to these stories, but the people who produce them as well. It's an institution and we need to keep it going.
Yeah, so if you believe that Radio K is something worth keeping in the Twin Cities and keeping in your life, become a member right now. You can go to RadioK.org. Unfortunately, there are no Radio K volunteers standing behind the phones because, well, it's Sunday, but RadioK.org, any amount makes you a member. Now, Noel, I have to ask, have you ever participated in karaoke?
I have, but I only ever do the same song. It's Billy Idol's White Wedding.
So that's your one go-to song?
Yes, because I would be afraid to try to do anything else.
Okay. Well, for our question of the week, this week, new volunteer reporter Eric Schultz asked people around campus, what is your go-to karaoke song?
Shaggy, It Wasn't Me.
Someone Like You by Adele.
Call Me Maybe.
Probably Call Me Maybe.
Call Me Maybe.
Call Me Maybe.
Baby Got Back.
Baby Got Back.
Crazy by Gnarls Barkley.
Adele, Rumor Has It.
Superman, Five for Fighting.
I think you gotta go with something by Justin Bieber, like One Time, maybe.
One Thing by One Direction.
It's gotta be Gangnam Style right now.
I would definitely do Wannabe by the Spice Girls.
Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Say Don't Stop Believing from Journey.
Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Don't Stop Believing.
Enter Sandman by Metallica.
Welcome to the Jungle.
Lenny Kravitz, Fly Away.
Billy Idol's Dancing with Myself.
Living on a Prayer.
I Have the Tiger.
I Have the Tiger.
I Have the Tiger.
If I had to do a karaoke song, probably be Yeah by Usher.
Nothing compares to you.
Ice Ice Baby by Vanilla Ice.
Am I singing with another person? Because yeah. I really like to sing Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
Do you like Bohemian Rhapsody or something?
All Star by Smash Mouth.
This one's for the girls.
Piano Man.
Afternoon Delight.
I think One One Eye by Maroon 5.
Girls Just Wanna Have Fun.
Girls Just Wanna Have Fun.
Man, I Feel Like a Woman by Shania Twain.
Man, I Feel Like a Woman by Shania Twain.
Man, I Feel Like a Woman.
That Shania Twain song? That Feel Like a Woman.
Brown Eyed Girl.
Dirt Road Anthem.
Garth Brooks, Friends in Low Places.
An Elvis Presley song. You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog.
I'll Make a Man Out of You from Milan.
Just when you think an art form is dead and dying, leave it to the DIY community to resurrect it once again. As print publishing makes its way for the internet, print is brought back to life with just a copy machine and some staples, a form of publication called the zine. Now, zines have played a huge part in music cultures going back decades and decades. And on the 22nd, Minneapolis had it celebrated its very own Zine Fest, a celebration of DIY publishing. And our reporter Jamie Nelson caught up with two zinesters participating in this year's festival.
It's all over the news. Print publishing is in decline. Well, unless you publish yourself.
Zines were really popular, and especially the 80s and 90s. Basically, they are independent publishing pieces that can be about anything and take any form.
That was Holly Hilgenberg, creator of the zine CLAP. CLAP, which stands for Creative Ladies Are Powerful, began as a ladies' craft night and evolved into a zine.
We mostly knew each other through our boyfriend's bands. So we knew what it was like, you know, to have the boring night when your boyfriend would go to band practice and you'd just be sitting there watching TV and feeling kind of like a loser. I was meeting with my friend Lisa, and we started talking about doing a zine and doing a publication. So
she explains how they came up with the name of their zine.
CLAP just stuck. I think, obviously, there's the STD reference that a lot of people think is funny, but it's also, you know, applause, like, it's very active. And we really like the idea of, you know, putting creativeness with power and, of course, talking about women in the title. So that's where
zines are typically sold for a few dollars at record stores and independent bookstores. Issues of CLAP have been sold over the internet internationally. In an issue of CLAP, you will find an advice column, mixtape listings, poems, and whatever contributors wish to write about. Contributor Ryn Gibson.
Like, I've written about coupon clipping, like at-home spa treatments for broke people, women fighting civil war in Liberia, polyamory, like, it's whatever you want to write.
Last year, CLAP participated in Zine Fest, where they met other zinesters and sold their issues.
Last year was my first year going to it. We had a table there, and it was really awesome. I mean, people were really friendly, and we had a lot of people come up and talk to us about what we do, and also just, like, walking around and talking to other people and seeing their zines was really inspiring and really cool to see so many people doing their own independent publishing. And
the value of do-it-yourself publishing is that contributors are free from censorship, allowing for other voices to be heard.
We're open to male contributors, but we do have an emphasis on, if not necessarily a female voice, but having the other speak.
Also having a safe place for women to share their stories and to have a voice, which is a big reason why we don't do any sort of editing. It's about sharing your own stories and having a place that you can, you know, inspire other people and just do what you want and not be intimidated by what some other person's vision of, like, what your creative output should be.
Patrick Larkin, creator of the zine Rot Milk, has a different idea.
In future issues, we seek to expand to include advertisements from multinational corporations so that we may keep the print form alive.
He's only kidding. You won't find ads in their zine. Rather, you'll find hilarious drawings and fiction depicting the weirdest aspects of pop culture. Co-creator Joe Scott describes one of his drawings.
So I have a drawing in the second issue, and it shows two men, and they're each reaching over and grabbing the other one's nose. And then passing through each of their torsos is a tall skyscraper building on its side. And that drawing was inspired by a show I saw on public TV about the downtown area of Minneapolis and how there were these two guys that would always grab each other's noses, like two alcoholics that would just hang out and grab each other's noses like all day. Then like they tore down that whole area and like built skyscrapers there, and it's just like a metaphor for that.
In Rot Milk, you will also find fake statistics, stories about the government growing human torsos as weapons of war, as well as fake TV listings.
Rawhide, CBS, 9 Eastern, 8 Central. Gil discovers Rowdy has been eating his yogurts and tweets his displeasure. Just Shoot Me, NBC, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Dennis Finch refuses to cry as terrorists crash two planes into the Twin Towers.
You can't buy a newspaper without talking about it. Everyone has something to say about the future of publishing. Now, how zines fit into that future is a little different.
The zine media form is very nice because it doesn't have to be any specific thing, because any moron can just, like, print on some 8.5 and 11 sheets of paper and fold them together. And that's what I want. I want my everyday Joe moron friends to make weird little pamphlets.
Talking about the idea of print now becoming more of like a boutique type thing and like a revival in it, it being more of like an art thing. And I feel like that actually fits really well with zines, and that they're not meant to make money. You know, like people do it just because they're passionate about it. So I think they'll always be around.
This is Jamie Nelson with Culture Q.
You're listening to Culture Q live here on Radio K. And joining me in studio now is producer Mitch Skinner to help me out with this week's top seven.
Right, and we're calling this top seven the top seven worst or worst? Or which one are we going with?
The top seven worst ways.
With a T, okay.
Worst with a T, yeah.
Yeah, either way, there's a lot better ways to spend your money than these seven things, especially if you donate to Radio K. Go to radiok.org right now and you can do that. Anyway, to start off our list, number seven worst way to spend your money is on cable or satellite.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, many, many people now have subscription services that allow them on-demand access to any number of TV shows and movies. And so paying an arm and a leg for something that you're only probably going to use maybe like a handful of channels for, it just doesn't seem that economical anymore.
Yeah, it's really an issue of patience here, because like network TV will go online the next day or in the next couple of weeks, and then services like Hulu or Netflix or anything else out there will offer like anything you can get on TV a little bit later and at a much cheaper price. Number six on our list is lending money to friends. This one seems to really hurt, but maybe it's because I'm usually the one getting money from friends and benefiting from it, but it's, I guess, a bad idea to lend money to friends.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that you might never recoup. I mean, because you can kind of use that friendship as a crutch to say like, oh, you know, I can't pay you back. You know, can we just extend it? And it just kind of keeps going on and on. But it comes with the caveat that, yeah, you know, friends are people that you want to support, but maybe not too much loaning of money to friends. We'll say with that. We'll say with number six.
Yeah, the issue is you really have to pick your friends properly. And I don't know, it can ruin good friendships and even family members if you, between money, and that's just a bad idea.
And that's right. Now, Mitch, what is our number five item on this list of the worst ways to spend your money?
It is the 100 tacos for $100 deal, famously, well, made famous from an episode on The Simpsons, in which Bart wanted to spend his $100 earned on 100 tacos, and Marge made him save it instead.
Yeah, and even though that comes as a joke, like, it is true that eating out, and especially something like a taco, where if you really broke it down,
you shouldn't spend more than like $40 on 100 tacos.
That's true. Like, because if you broke it down, it's probably only about like 30 cents a taco. And with restaurants, there's usually like a threefold increment of like between cost and what you actually pay.
But boy, I sure could go for 100 tacos right about now.
Mm-hmm. Number four on this list, it is concerts that you go to out of obligation rather than a strong love of the band. I mentioned earlier, Mitch, that I have my own experience with this.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay, so at the State Fair this last year, I paid cash money to see Demi Lovato. Just coming out, just saying it. It was a situation where my girlfriend was going and some of her friends were going, but then some friends bailed, and I was asked with big eyes if I would go to the concert. And yeah, it's quite a bit of money. As expensive as concerts are, it's just a little too much money to spend on something that you're not going to really enjoy. And truth be told, I didn't even get to see Demi Lovato. We got kind of booted out after the opener. So
yeah, and especially if it's like far out and you don't know what your plans are going to be in the future, to spend like a ton of money on the concert if you're not absolutely sure you want to go to it can be a real issue. I've burned as much as $25 doing that before in the past. So number three on our list of top seven worst ways to spend your money is giving it to a Nigerian prince in hopes that he will return the fortunes to you later.
That money isn't coming back. I'm so sorry. Number two on this list is another one that makes a lot of sense when you think about it, but bottled water. I mean,
especially like living here in Minneapolis, yes, it is a city, but it's just so much, it's clean. It's clean water. You don't need to waste your money on bottled water. You're just causing more environmental damage. And yeah, it's water is pretty cheap at a drinking fountain. So number one worst way to spend your money, the returns are good for about one in millions and millions of people, but that is to play the lottery.
Yeah, there's hardly any chance of ever winning. And you know, there are people that will buy a ticket every week, and that's money that's going down the drain, unless of course you're the one out of 140 million that, you know, somehow
right.
gets that.
And of course we're talking on the individual level because, you know, of course the lottery supports cities and stuff like that, but from a personal standpoint, you probably shouldn't play the lottery.
Yeah. One really great way though to spend your money, I can guarantee you, is become a member of Radio K, home of great music here from the University of Minnesota. Become a member. Go to RadioK.org. And that is our top seven. Thank you, Mitch.
Yeah, we'll spend it in a lot better things than the lottery or tacos.
All right. Thank you. You were listening to Culture Q live here on Radio K. And for our final story tonight, I've got Mr. Todd Crotty in studio to introduce his story.
Hey, Ma. Hey, Dad. If you're listening out there, go to RadioK.org. Become a member. I just want to say great fun working with Culture Q and doing this stuff. Let's just get right to it. Hit it, man. If you're like most college students, you enjoy having fun on a Saturday night. And recently, while out on the town, I stumbled across a cover band that really, truly inspired me. Now, you in the audience may be asking yourself, why cover bands? But I think the question you should be asking is, why not?
Cover bands are great because they play songs that you haven't heard in 10 years, and then you hear them and you're like, yeah. But they're just all abroad. I don't know. I love them.
Yeah, it triggers all the memories of high school and college.
I guess it's because you know what you're going to get. I think people, they reach a point in their life where their ears no longer are willing to tune in new sounds. The ears grow old, in other words.
Because it is cool, because it is something we look forward to as audience.
I like any music, to be honest with you, and cover bands are awesome too.
We only got 120 people in my town, so we don't have cover bands.
The music. And what they're actually doing and how they're covering.
And that's what I found. Three great bands, each unique in their own way. And if our panel of cover band experts haven't yet convinced you why you should see a cover band, let Terry Walsh, lead singer of the Van Morrison tribute band, the Belfast Cowboys, explain why he loves what he and his band does.
Bottom line is people like it, and we have a good time playing. It's a bunch of good guys in the band, you know, I can't think of a better way to spend a weekend night.
But by himself, it's impossible for Terry Walsh to duplicate the sounds of Van Morrison. In fact, it takes as many as 10 musicians on stage at one time to create the effect.
If I had known it would be this good, I would have done it a long time ago. I thought, oh, I'd want to sell out, you know, it was really stupid. But January of 2002, we were getting ready for the gig, and the horns showed up at rehearsal. And when I heard the horns, along with what we'd been doing for so many months, a tear rolled down my cheek. I was so excited. I'm singing with a horn section, with a good horn section.
You may have never heard Brett Eggert sing, but if you've been enjoying local live music in the Twin Cities, you know Vic Filari.
It's the music itself. People really love Van Morrison's music. When you have that sort of feeling like home, or, you know, it's a lot of times the music brings back some kind of memory to them, and here it is live. That adds kind of a whole new dimension, kind of like seeing a hero in a person, you know.
But exactly why you like cover bands is different for everyone. Bugs Place in South St. Paul has sat at the corner of Bryant and Concord for more than 28 years. Crystal Benson has grown up watching bands come in and out and knows what to keep an eye out for.
The following. You want a following. I really go for the local bands, the bands that play for the door.
And whether you're a bar manager, patron, or musician, everyone has a reason for liking cover bands. Welcome, Church of Cash.
I've been doing original music for many, many years, and I still do. But now I'm a little bit older, so I'm like, I need one band to make money. But I'm having a ball playing this Johnny Cash thing. My old man used to sing it to me every day when I was a kid. It's kind of part of my blood that I didn't even know about. Now I'm just kind of reconnecting with it.
And that's what's interesting about the Church of Cash. See, it goes beyond just the performer. For Jaden Calk, it's about his fans.
So people would just be drinking their beers, but every time I play Johnny Cash, people always lifted up their heads and looked back, like, what's this guy doing? You know, like, they enjoyed it. So I said, well, wait a minute, maybe I should start a Johnny Cash band, see what happens.
And after learning more about cover bands than I ever thought possible, I only wanted to really know one thing.
The question I have is, if you could start your own cover band, which one would you cover?
Maybe Lynyrd Skynyrd or something fun.
Band that I could be? That'd be old John. I was a great mod enthusiast in my teenage days, and Nelson is all that British mod fashion maven.
The Spice Girl, come on.
For Culture Q, I'm Tad Crowdy.
Well, that's going to do it for our show this week. Contributors to Culture Q's show tonight were Tad Crowdy, Noel Clark, Mitch Skinner, Jamie Nelson, and Eric Schulz. Producers for Culture Q are Mitch Skinner, Noel Clark, and Markita Fornoff. Our culture coach is Sarah Lemanchek, and host and managing editor is myself, Mark Sheely. You can find Culture Q on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. And if you miss something fascinating, you can always find recent episodes of Culture Q online at RadioK.org. Thanks for listening. And if you haven't already, go to RadioK.org and become a member of Radio K. That's all for this week. We look forward to seeing you next week. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.